Random House Audio presents Perfectly Imperfect, A Life in Progress by Lee Woodruff. This is the author, Lee Woodruff.
Introduction. This is Bob Woodruff. I feel incredibly fortunate to have met Lee more than two decades ago, and not just because we fell in love, got married, had wonderful children, and only really fight seriously once a year. Okay, maybe twice a year, but once is always about money. Listening to this audiobook highlighted the qualities I see when I'm with Lee in person. Humor, honesty, poignancy, irreverence, reflection, and just plain warmth. She writes just the way she talks. Listening to these chapters is like sitting on a porch where Lee is regaling a group of friends with some funny stories. She can somehow move effortlessly between humor and sorrow, joy and pathos, almost as if she's not one person but many. She has the uncanny ability to capture a moment and describe what others are feeling. It is her complexity and accessibility with which I fell in love. She probably could have been an actress or a comedian, a writer for television or of screenplays. Instead, she married me and set up house in various towns around the country and overseas as my career kept us on the move and our family grew. Being a mother was then, and still is, the heart of her life, but she always kept writing. For many years, especially early on in my journalism career, Lee used her writing skills to pen magazine articles and corporate brochures, public relations materials and videos for businesses, anything to pay the bills, as she would say in the lean days when my salary barely covered the rent. And when I finally earned a respectable wage, still, she kept writing. It was her catharsis, the thing she did for herself in a way to chronicle the small moments of family life, the funny and touching anecdotes that might otherwise be forgotten over the years. For 22 years, Lee has been making me laugh with her observations and her keen take on the world, and for all that time, I've been encouraging her to write a book. So nothing could make me happier than to write and narrate an introduction for her first solo effort. When we, as a team, wrote our book in an instant, I concentrated on facts and memories, while she poured out feelings and emotion. This is the difference between our two styles. During my injury and recovery, I was amazed watching my wife at how she was able to keep so many things together, the children's needs and schedules, while managing their fears and concerns. Lee is quick to point out in this recording that multitasking isn't my strong suit, and I've looked on with awe as Lee has juggled her career, motherhood, friendships, and family responsibilities throughout our entire marriage. Now, with Perfectly Imperfect, she has created a volume of stories about these collective experiences. Each chapter contains commonalities, the observances that many women and even men will be able to relate to as they see themselves on the pages. I am honored to share my life and my wife with you in this way, and may her journey enrich your own world in some small way.
Chapter 1. Amusement Park Mecca. "Do you want a margarita?" yelled the insipidly chirpy waitress in the Hawaiian shirt. We were in the Jimmy Buffett-themed restaurant at Universal Studios Orlando, and she was trying to be heard over Come Monday, which was blaring from the speaker system. "No," I said wearily. My feet throbbed, and as the designated pack mule, I'd been lugging the 20-pound backpack with the camera, extra batteries and chargers, water, fleeces, and enough snacks to outfit an Everest expedition. I'd been so distracted getting everyone else breakfast that morning that I hadn't had more than a few bites of the kids' cold toast. My blood sugar level was alarmingly low. I was ready to drink the ketchup right out of the crusty red bottle on the table. "Really?" The waitress sounded genuinely surprised, almost disdainful. "You sure you don't want a margarita?" What I said was, "No, thank you." What I really wanted to do was grab her by the front of her fluorescent shirt with one fist, like they did in spaghetti westerns, and snarl, "Listen, amiga, you see these four kids here? You think I can possibly deal with this theme park and all four of them if I start downing tequila? Do you want me to blow chunks on the Hulk? Would you like me to pass out here in Margaritaville and lose this brood somewhere between Seuss Landing and Fear Factor Live?" Instead, I kept my voice even, my countenance beaming, and an adoring look focused on my kids. I didn't want them to suspect for a moment that I wasn't as ecstatic as they were to be there. I'd shouldered the responsibility of continually making sure everyone was in tow, of keeping all four kids contented despite age gaps greater than the drop at Splash Mountain, determined that they view me as most fun mom. I wanted them to remember that I'd cheerily gone on all the rides with them, from Jimmy Neutron's Nicktoon Blast to the Amazing Adventures of Spider-Man. I wanted it seared in their brains that I'd let them order chocolate sundaes from room service and stay up late with in-room movies. I was focused on creating a fond memory so that, on my deathbed, they could all recall the time that I'd loosened the purse strings and let them buy souvenirs and eat unlimited amounts of greasy park food. This was downright radical compared to our normal household rules. I knew enough to understand that it would be years before the day-to-day martyrdom of mothering would even hit their radar screens. The nutritious home-cooked dinners, the homework patrol, and the midnight snuggles when they had the flu that made up the real heroics of parenting didn't earn medals. Those acts wouldn't truly be appreciated until my kids had children of their own and were bleeding out of their ears from the decibel level on an elementary school field trip bus ride. What they would remember, what would live in the collective film library of their childhood memories, was the highlight reel, the trips to Magic Kingdom, the ski weekends, and the beach vacations. The rest of it, the work in the trenches, would be like background noise. It was low-level radar, like the commercials in between the Oscar presentations. I needed to make this one big. Our country's theme parks are the proving ground for parental excellence. I've yet to meet a mom or dad who's been able to escape a pilgrimage to Disney, Universal, Six Flags, or any of the other uber-intense, mega-packed square miles of finger-licking fun for the whole family. Folks will clip coupons, hunt for bargains, look for deals, and save for years. Anything to cross that threshold for the kids and snap those cherished family photos with Mickey or Buzz Lightyear with a giant roller coaster in the background. But the pages in our family album wouldn't have the whole picture. My husband would need to be photoshopped into the frame, because once again, right before the trip, he had been sent on assignment to cover some world event. What had been planned as a family vacation had ended up as a milestone in single parenting. The responsibility, plus the 20-pound backpack, was now on my Sherpa's shoulders. So here I was, alone with four kids, Mac, age 16, Catherine, nearly 14, and twins Nora and Claire, who were 7. This was my big weekend in Orlando where I was determined to prove that I was, in fact, the best mom in the world. I felt the promise this one day had to erase all the recent failures, the moments when I had been distracted or hadn't read to the twins at bedtime or had spent too much time on my email. There was always so much more I could be doing, should be doing, if I was to be a great mom. So far, we had braved threatening thunderclouds, pouring rain, and then blistering humidity. No wonder the park had been quiet and the lines not too long. We'd been soaked through to our footwear, and the weight on my back had felt 10 pounds heavier. I had become an extra in Saving Private Ryan. As the afternoon had worn on, though, the sun had emerged, and masses of people began pushing through the turnstiles in all of their exuberant glory, as if Oprah herself had announced her giant giveaway sweepstakes. It seemed that everyone had a shot at the shiny red Chevrolet if they poured through the gates right now. We'd snagged the last available table in the Jimmy Buffett restaurant and were soon digging into a coma-inducing amount of food. Obese hamburgers, fries like fence posts, nachos dripping with cheese and jalapenos, sheer excess. This was vacation food, designed to stop arterial blood in its tracks. The volcano song began blasting over the speakers and some sort of ear-splitting alarm with lights went off in the restaurant as a giant papier-mâché volcano began to smoke and froth. Soon, green margarita water was running down the mountain and into a huge swirling goblet, poised over the bar, reminiscent of Linda Blair in The Exorcist. My kids were transfixed. I was catatonic. On the giant TV screens of the All Buffett, All the Time Sirius radio simulcast, men in silly shark-shaped foam hats holding up beers, and women in what looked like a perimenopausal wet t-shirt contest with unspeakable sayings scrawled on their chest, danced across the screen, wagging everything that was waggable. It looked like a colossal episode of Grandparents Gone Wild. "Mom, what's wrong with those ladies?" Claire asked. Mac just smiled with an "I've seen it all before" teenage look.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?